Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here for a crossover episode today. We're going to talk a little bit of Orioles. And obviously, everybody's very excited about the Orioles organization. They're off to a great start. Lots of young talent. And the only thing that seems to be hanging right now is the Orioles do not at present have a lease in place on their stadium. And want to make sure that we discuss that, what it may mean for the Orioles' long-term future, as well as some Masson reversals in court that have come up recently. Here to do that with me is Josh Shiruka, the producer of the Film Study Show. Josh, how you doing?
I'm doing well. And I guess since it's Orioles, I should plug Section 336 and Birdland Sports, which is my Orioles focus.
Absolutely. So if you're not subscribing already, or you don't listen to 336 regularly, very worthwhile Orioles podcast, definitely worth the listen. Josh, appreciate you coming on this show. I've just teed it up a little bit in terms of the situation here. But during the offseason, there was talk about getting the lease extended for another, I don't know how many years, whether it's 30 or 15 or what it might have been with the Angeloses. And they left the thread hanging, as far as I recall. Can you kind of update me or correct my thought on the process?
Yeah, so they did. The current lease expires in December of this year. End of the year, December 31st. Now, so part of it is that they need to renew the lease. But it's not, there's a lot of talk of people love to hate on the Angelos family. So they love to say, oh, well, that's a sign that they're trying to leave Baltimore. When really you got to look at the bigger picture. And part of that renewed lease, the Ravens just went through this recently with a long-term lease, which opened up, what was it, $30 million from the state? I'd have to look up the exact number. I should have had that written down. Mm-hmm. But the Orioles passed on a 5-year extension because the Ravens, they were trying to keep in line with the Ravens. The Ravens just signed a long-term deal, which gave them a ton of money towards the stadium from the state based on last legislation session, but that requires a longer term lease. What the Orioles turned down was a 5-year extension while negotiating, because the Orioles want to get into that money right away, which means they have to sign a longer than 5-year extension.
Right. Makes sense now. And this is the Orioles would use that money presumably, or have as an offset to, however you want to think of it, future improvements to the stadium. There's probably also a certain amount set for improvements to the stadium on a per year basis, or some sort of a fund that they're building up as they go along during the lease. Yeah.
Yes, it is. But the state legislation just set hey, if you sign a long-term year deal, we'll give you $30 million, Ravens $30 million. Ravens signed their long-term. The Orioles are about to do the same, and they'll do it by the end of the year.
All right. Well, looking forward to that, certainly. And once the long-term lease is in place, and they'd be talking about a 15-year, you think? I think it'll be on par with the Ravens?
Yeah, I think it'll be 15 to 25, something like that. I believe that's the rule in order to get this state money.
So if it was more years, presumably it'd be more money. So it'd probably be the fewest years so that they can renegotiate for more money.
Yeah, so I just pulled up the money. If the Orioles sign a long-term lease, that opens up $600 million state money into Oriole Park at Camden Yards.
Okay.
So that's a big amount of money. Mm-hmm. It's why the Ravens signed, and the Orioles will do the same.
Okay, that is a great number. Oriole Park at Camden Yards, definitely a ballpark that'll be worth keeping around for another 30 years. Certainly a place and a
place that needs the money. Mm-hmm. Last week or 2 weekends ago, I went to Atlanta to Truist Park, one of the newer stadiums. And we always talk about Camden Yards as like the start of this new generation of ball clubs. Well, Camden Yards is still every year listed as one of the top ballparks. But technology-wise and stuff, the other ballparks blow it away. Our Jumbotrons look horrible compared to the modern ones. Mm-hmm. Our sound system is really hard to hear and understand at Camden Yards. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely things where that $600 million already has earmarked in. And I'm sure, knowing the Angelos family, some of that money is to set up the stadium for concerts, but most of it is for baseball.
Okay. All right. And the Angelos family themselves... With Peter's death looming or here.
He has not died yet.
Yes, we're recording this on May 16th, just so you know here. And if you know when it occurs, which obviously is going to be close, there presumably will be a significant estate tax issue for the Angelos family.
Yes, I'm sure. You know how it goes with these big corporations. There's the states work it out mm-hmm. to make sure. But yes, there'll be something going on. And maybe I know there's already some stuff where it's in a trust and stuff. So I know that helps avoid some of those state laws. But yes, Peter Angelos is 93 years old. And apparently all the reports are pretty weak and out of it. So his sons have had their own inner working battle over ownership of the team, but John Angelos seems to be the managing person.
Okay. All right. So if estate taxes, you know, start kicking in at $10 million, I believe right now, in terms of this. So it's very significant. Angelos would not be leaving the team to a wife, correct?
Oh, his wife is still around as well.
Okay. So there are a few years for which she can own it, and there'd be a 100% deduction on the money. But it's not going to pass tax free. I know the Irsays when the original Irsay moving van man left had a problem with estate taxes as well.
Right. Yeah. It's 40% is estate taxes, federal estate taxes,
and it's more than that actually, because the state estate taxes are also 16%. So it ends up being. Being 50.4% is the total 50.4 or 49.6, one of the two for every marginal dollar over $10 million. That ends up being a lot of money. Obviously, if half of it has to be as you pay, so I personally it's an amount of money so large I can understand why the Angeloses are scrimping and saving and trying to figure out how do I keep the ball club.
Well, and that is why there's conversations about selling the team. It's not about moving them to Baltimore. But it's about it's about the finances and the behind the scenes stuff that we aren't privy to.
Mm-hmm. All right. So anyway, it's certainly a possibility here. Now, obviously, we just had the move of the Oakland A's to Las Vegas.
We're about to.
It
has not even officially been announced, but all things are pointing to that in 2027, the Oakland A's will be in Las Vegas.
And that is just an unbelievable hell they will face in the intervening years, is all I can say. They're already facing it now. They may be the worst team in baseball, and they have fans at home that are basically walking around with signs every game. Ones who are there, but you know, they might move to a minor league facility in Las Vegas.
I have not seen that yet as far as where they're going to play, because yes, you don't want to move. You're not going to get a great fan base. There's different things because Oakland is really close to San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
So you can compare it to the Orioles and the Nationals. And they're so close together. But it's also for your diehard Oakland Athletic fans, they can still travel to Vegas easily. I don't know, for me, if that was in the Orioles situation, I'm not following that team. That team's dead to me when they leave. But yep. I know many people who, when the Colts left Baltimore, they continued their Colts.
I know a handful of people.
Right. It doesn't work for me, but I know some people have.
Let me just say, I grew up near the ballpark, about a mile from Memorial Stadium. I can't even imagine in a daily sport doing that. I can't imagine doing it in a weekly sport, but I certainly can't imagine doing it in a daily sport. And supporting a team for an owner who you know, pulled the rug out from under you, no dice on that. And particularly on a daily sport, it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, Oakland's a tough comparison because the city did not support this team.
Mm-hmm.
They had opportunity after opportunity after opportunity to replace the Coliseum, and they showed that they had no interest in helping out. So that's kind of the heart of them leaving is, hey, this other city says we're going to help you out.
The reason I brought up the A's in part was in part to compare to San Francisco, but also to say that once the A's move, kind of who the red marker is on now changes one down or one up, depending on how you want to look at it. Who's the next team likely to?
The next team is Tampa.
Uh-huh.
Because Tampa has Tampa continues to win. And the one thing we talk about with, and we've seen it with Baltimore baseball, is when you win, the fans show up. Well, Tampa wins, mm-hmm. and the fans still don't show up. And they don't have the support of the city. They need a new stadium. The city doesn't support them. Stadium's in a horrible location. The city doesn't support them moving it to a better location. So Tampa's the next one on the list. Right now, Orlando is making a push for an expansion team, or also trying to convince the Tampa Bay Rays to move in to the central state and move to Orlando.
So 32 teams would be a possibility, certainly, for the for Major League Baseball. But by doing so, aren't they creating an additional problem that it takes away two sites, which are good ones for baseball, potentially, without addressing the current lousy sites?
No. Well, yes and no. We will be to 32 teams in the next 3, 4, 5 years. I'd say... Well, that's you know what? I'll be more generous. I'll say 7. By 2030, we're going to be at 32 teams. Okay. Rob Manfred, that is his mission, is to get to 32 teams. I think we're seeing TV deals help a lot in that. And I think because of TV deals, we're going to see smaller stadiums in the future. Stadiums don't need to hold as many people. You're going to see stadiums slightly smaller because you're making all the TV money with HD, 4K, and all that. You're seeing that already progress in other sports. But I think... this is why it's important that the Athletics go to Las Vegas, because you check that issue off. And the Tampa Bay issue will be worked out in the next 2 years as well, because you have to have that fixed before you expand as well. And once you get those two arranged, it's why the Oakland issue has been pushed. It's why they've been pushing the Tampa issue and negotiating and planning some things, because they have to button those up before they talk to Nashville, Portland, Montreal, or Atlanta. Or Orlando.
Okay, Nashville, Portland. Nashville,
Portland, Montreal, Salt Lake City, and Orlando are the current cities pushing for expansion.
So presumably Tampa could move to Orlando. Montreal, no way in hell are they getting another team. I don't care what they say. Yeah. How are you feeling about that?
Montreal is tricky because Montreal got screwed more than anyone with the baseball strike. Montreal was going to win the World Series that year. And they got screwed with the baseball strike, and it never bounced back. And then they lost it to the Nationals. So I see Montreal's one of those soft spots for a long-term baseball fan. And I think Rob Manfred, like every sport, we're seeing this in the NFL. You're seeing the NFL. The NFL desperately wants to expand to Europe and to Mexico because they want to be this international sport. Mm-hmm. Baseball wants to do the same thing. They're doing this World Baseball Classic every 3-4 years. They want the same thing. So I think Montreal is intriguing because it gets you over the border. But I think the front runners right now are Nashville and either Portland or Salt Lake City.
Okay.
Because those are big holes on the map. Right now, Nashville is Braves country. North and South Carolina is Orioles country. There's a big gap. North of Atlanta, your next Major League Baseball team is Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
Or Washington, either one. But so, there's a big gap there. So Nashville is number one.
The last change, of course, and the big one was when the league was where they're at 30 teams already, and they were talking about expansion or contraction. Were they at 28 at that point, or are they at 30 at that point? When Minnesota and Montreal were slated to contract briefly. And then they said, no, we're not doing that. They were at 30
because they were, because that was already, we went to 30 with Colorado and Florida, Colorado and the Marlins, right? I believe those were the two that added 29 and 30. So we were already there.
Okay.
Cause they came mid 90s.
Yeah.
They came mid 90s. And then it was early 2000s when we moved the Nationals or moved the Expos.
Okay. So a lot of people said at the time that they didn't really fix the problem with having too many baseball teams at that point. They just moved the problem to another location, and moving it to Washington absolutely screwed the Orioles in terms of their market.
Totally. You know,
I'm so frustrated about this. It's a regular soapbox item for me, but you know, obviously twice in 1961 and again in 1971, the Orioles whipped a team out of DC, and they've won that battle twice for this single market is the way I look at it. I've said from the beginning of this, I think they're in a 30-year struggle again with the Nationals. I don't know which way it'll go for only one team to win. I'm very concerned, obviously, with the Nationals World Series title. And a lot of it was around the two number one draft picks in a row with Strasburg and Harper, that they were in they were going to be the team that survived it. Now the Nationals are in the dumpster again a little bit, and it looks like it's not an obvious thing to me anymore. The Orioles are certainly on the rise with Elias and a lot of young talent. But why shouldn't I believe that we're still headed for something like that, where there's only going to end up being one team in the Baltimore / DC market?
And there could be. And right now, the Nationals have struggled to draw outside of their World Series year. But I think, but you're right. If you look at the history of the Orioles, all through the 90s, Camden Yards opened up in 92. And all the way up until the 2000s, they were drawing 40,000 plus a game on average.
They a lot of people don't know this, but for the entire 1990s, which includes 2 years at Memorial Stadium, they led the major leagues in attendance for the entire decade.
Right.
So
now, part of that is a lot of D.C. money and D.C. businesses, because we were 45 minutes out, an hour out. We will never get that back as while the Nationals are in. And since the Nationals came, our attendance has dropped. That since then, we've been 26,000-27,000 averaging. We did get up in 2014 to 30, and then we've been hovering around 25. People like to think really short term. And think, 2019 we averaged 16,000. That's horrible, but that was the start of our rebuild, where we said, hey, we're going to be bad for a while. 2020 was COVID year, so no fans. Mm-hmm. 2021, we averaged 9,700 a game. That's embarrassing. That's embarrassing.
Yep.
Last year, that bounced back to 16. You're going to see a bounce back this year where that number is going to increase again. On Mother's Day this past week, there was 35,000 people there for a Sunday afternoon game. Mm-hmm. That's all good signs. Winning baseball and excitement brings crowds back. There's definitely cultural things that have changed since the 90s as well, outside of the Nationals. Baltimore has been in the news a lot the past few years for danger, concerns, violence, crime, and that always hurts the team, especially when the team is dedicated to being in the city. And I like that. They should be part of the city. So part of that is going to be a problem for them, that they're going to have to work with the city to make people feel safe, and not only make people feel safe, because when you go to Camden Yards, I've never felt dangerous going to Camden Yards. And I was down there in the middle of the riots where they locked us all in the stadium. Still didn't feel dangerous getting to my car afterwards.
I agree.
It's perfectly fine. But for the people that don't go all the time, and all they do is hear on the news about how Baltimore's dangerous, it's going to keep you away. So they need to do a little bit better with that, with the city and marketing and PR of, hey, it's safe to be down here, and that'll help. But it's unfair to expect 45,000 fans a night and think that that's what it takes to keep your baseball club alive now because of those TV contracts.
Let's go to the TV contracts for a moment, because this is my big part of the whole market switch of the Expos.
Yes.
The Expos coming to be the Nationals. The Masson deal was supposed to be the wear guild for the Orioles losing a portion of their market. It was supposed to be their payoff. Was they got Masson and they Washington, if you want to play here, you're playing under this shitty deal for Masson. And now the rules seem to have changed. We're feeling sorry for the Nationals and we want to give them money.
It's very interesting. Major League Baseball screwed the Angelos family. And people don't like to hear it, because even the national media is fed up with Peter Angelos and has a bad taste in her. And part of that is there's a lot of big guys up at ESPN and MLB that went through the Baltimore Sun and dealt with the Orioles in the 90s. And they learned to not like the Peter Angelos family. And that it sucks, because Major League Baseball did. They promised the Orioles. They made this promise that, hey, to make sure you're not financially killed and you are a mid-market team, to make sure you don't become a small market team, we're going to give you the TV rights to the Nationals. Then after the deal was done, after the team was in place, after the Orioles couldn't do anything about it, they took it back. Mm-hmm. And are saying, well, no, we got to renegotiate and you owe the Nationals a ton of money. So it's not, people don't like to hear that, but the Angelos family, I hate that this lawsuit has dragged out so long. It's now at the point that the next appeal goes to the U.S. Supreme Court. That's how long we've been dealing with this.
I mean, that will give closure on the situation. Yes. But I'm not sure why, the next appeal is an appeal of some technicality of what's happened so far. It's not even necessarily a resolution of the entire thing. Although I guess depending on what they're appealing to the Supreme Court,
right,
whoever gets denied this next time, it's probably is a sharp shiv to the gut for their legal hopes.
It's going to be the end of this.
Okay.
There's going to be a winner, a loser, and it looks like right now the loser is going to be the Orioles.
Okay.
Which sucks, because I guess it was a lot of good faith that the Orioles had in doing this. And the Major League Baseball was so desperate to get a team into Washington, D.C. that they kind of messed this up. Because, you know, growing up, the Orioles controlled that market. That was all Orioles. All of Virginia was Orioles.
Mm-hmm.
So
all of North Carolina, pretty much. I mean, you really have to get pretty far down, whether it becomes Yankees or Braves or whatever.
Well, the Braves playing still, well, it's still technically North Carolina, South Carolina is Masson Orioles country. Mm-hmm. So it definitely hurts. And I know there's a lot of talk that the Orioles don't spend money because they're holding off for this lawsuit to end. And yeah, the Orioles have $300 million sitting in a bank somewhere waiting for this thing. But they were also the most profitable team last year. something like that. They were one of the top. They walked away with $46 million in profit at the end of the day last year.
You know, I have to really go through that as a finance guy to accept that, because if a lot of it came from the Masson money, then I need to know that it's truly earmarked for them. So if the $46 million has $30 million of Masson profits, or even $30 million of Masson revenues.
And that's what we don't know.
Yeah.
They were the fourth most profitable MLB team last year is what we do know.
Okay. So that is so opaque to me in terms of a number. I can't.
Well, and this is where John Angelos rubs people the wrong way, because he's asked about it and he says, oh, we're an open book. Come on over and you can flip through all the pages of our ledger. Mm-hmm. But then he takes it all back. So that's where the Angelos family hurts people.
Interesting. I wonder if this offer is any open to anyone.
No, he shut that down after being asked over and over again about it.
Okay.
He shut that down. Him and Dan Connolly. Look up Dan Connolly and his interaction. John Angelos did not do any favors for the Angelos family on how he handled that.
All right.
But check out Forbes. They're the ones that wrote the Orioles as the fourth most profitable last year. And that was partly because the Orioles didn't spend much money last year on players.
Right.
But again, it comes back to about the longevity and the Orioles in Baltimore. And there's nothing to think that the Orioles would leave Baltimore. There's been no talk outside of people who dislike the Orioles and people who dislike the Angelos family bringing up random rumors every time saying, oh, Nashville. Yes, John Angelos owns a house in Nashville. Yeah, he really seems to love the music industry, and his wife is like a CEO at a music company. That's great. Yes, he's the one pushing for Birdland Entertainment, which brings concerts into Camden Yards. And I don't think that's a bad thing. It's a good thing to use Camden Yards. It's a great venue, sure. great opportunity to use it. And the more you use it, if you have a Billy Joel and Elton John concert that happens once a year or once, not even once a year, for those type of concerts, you're saying that type of concert, Paul McCartney, you're seeing him, 10 years? It might be his last time ever performing in Baltimore. You're going to get people coming out to those concerts that will not risk the dangers of Baltimore to come to an Oriole game. And suddenly they say, you know what? I felt pretty safe going to Camden Yards. And that's going to lead into them coming to baseball games.
Okay. I mean, that's a fair statement. Josh, my fears are much more at a theoretical level. They're not at the Angelos has a home in Nashville. Angelos' family is tied.
Right. Hey guys, I want to tell you about the Eufy Video Lock, because when I'm not podcasting, I am. My day job is a smart home specialist, and the Eufy Video Smart Lock is perfect. This is what you guys need to go get. It replaces the deadbolt on your door, so now you can come home without fumbling with keys. You can just type in a code, or even better, use your fingerprint to unlock. After 1 second, you put your finger there, pops out, my door's open. It's perfect. It also is an integrated video doorbell. We've all seen the video doorbells. We all know the ones that are out there. I've seen many of them get stolen. No one's going to steal this because it's your door lock. It's impossible for them to steal. There's no monthly fee. Other ones do. But this one, it'll record locally, so you never have to pay if you don't want to. The battery, it lasts up to 4 months. Plus, it notifies you ahead of time. And I mentioned earlier, 1 second fingerprint recognition. No, I meant 1 second till it opens. The AI self-learning chip will learn your fingerprint even faster, and then it opens up. Completely keyless entry. No more keys. And I know I set this up as I'm a smart home specialist, but anyone can install this. All you need is a Phillips screwdriver. That's it. And then you're done. Guys, I love this product. Make sure you check it out. Now, here's the easiest thing to do. Just go on to Google or whatever you prefer and search Eufy Video Lock. That's EUFY Video Lock. Or visit eufyofficial.com/video lock to see how you can gain complete control of your door, just like me, just like Ken.
Hey.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Update your home with low-maintenance vinyl windows from JELD-WEN. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on JELD-WEN windows now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
The Nashville community. It's not any of that crap. It's the fact that this damn market is not big enough for two baseball teams. And we keep proving that. And the Orioles keep winning the battle twice in 61 and 71.
Well, if we look at last year, which was a down year for attendance, the Orioles were still drew more people to the stadium than Oakland, obviously, Miami, Tampa, Pittsburgh, Kansas City, Cleveland, and Cincinnati.
Okay, so it makes them eighth to the bottom in a 30-team league. And the Nationals were where?
Yes, but they're in the middle of a rebuild. The Nationals last year, where were they? They were 17, and we were 23.
Okay, so 17.
Last year, the Nationals outdrew us.
All right. I'm sticking with that point here. These two teams are 17 and 23 in the total major leagues in attendance, where you had a team that led the entire major leagues in attendance during the 90s. I don't need that to happen again, because that is an unrealistic continued expectation. In fact, it was already trending down by the time the Nationals got here because of the bad play of the late 90s and early 2000 teams after the 97 playoff run.
And you've seen this team change the way they spend money, where in those late 90s, we were bringing in Sammy Sosa. We were bringing in these big names and paying a lot of money out. And Roberto, we don't Alomar. Do that as much. Exactly.
Yeah. They had some good expenditures. They had some good contracts in the 90s. A lot of people didn't like the fact that the Orioles had one of the highest payrolls in baseball at that time.
For many years. Yeah.
Yeah. But
that's what no one gives the Angelos family credit for that.
My point here. The problem is the market size and how the Orioles had been one of the baseball's absolutely brilliant success stories in terms of putting together a ballpark and a winning tradition and a way of running their organization and marketing their team. It was just extremely successful. And Major League Baseball took that away from them. And now they're forced into this division, which has the major Canadian metropolis, even though, you know, that and get 60 cents will get you I don't know what it'll get you out of a machine these days. Maybe a buck and a quarter will actually get you a Coke out of a machine. But you have that problem. You have the fact that Boston is in the division. You have New York in the division. Part of what I would have wanted with the Nationals moving here is a switch of divisions. Is it the Orioles well, move to the National League East?
We're going to get that. When they go to 32 teams, we're going to see restructure.
8-4s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And when they do that, it makes sense. They're working their way there. We got rid of the DH. We expanded this year to play every team in the majors every year.
Mm-hmm.
Where right now we're playing every National League team, either at their home or in our home, and then it flips. So like last weekend we were in Atlanta.
I got it. It's the more balanced schedule, but it's not the balanced schedule.
No, it's right. But it's all getting rid of the DH in order to expand this. It's all leading up to 32 teams where we restructure.
Okay.
And when we restructure, that's why they're trying to build an Orioles-Nationals rivalry. Because when they restructure, they'll probably be in the same division.
Okay. And then that would make sense. And then who would be the teams that get lumped with the Yankees and Red Sox, the Blue Jays and the Phillies?
Yeah. So it'll be, if you look, it's interesting. If you look at the schedule, they try to pair people up. So it's the Yankees and the Mets. They're going to work them into a division together.
I don't agree. If when you have those situations, I think in Chicago too, I think they'll keep them in opposite leagues.
I don't know. I think they're moving towards region and region ball on how they divide it up. And I think that's also part of looking at expansion, adding another West Coast team and another East Coast team as they divide up by region. I think by region, you then also save money on airfare and everything that helps balance out the future of the game.
That is a relatively small offsetting value.
It is.
When the travel, when you compare it to the value of having New York teams in both leagues, is a real boon to the game in general. I mean, a lot of people would say it's not terrible that the Yankees have been good and have been one of the best teams the entire history of baseball, pretty much, because that's done, been so closely tied in to the success of the league as a whole.
Yeah, right. And yeah, that's true. And maybe they'll do, instead of 4-8s or 8-4s, they'll do 4-8s. So you'll have the four teams. So then that way you can keep Yankees and Mets in separate with other East Coast teams if you want. But the latest notes I saw kind of put the Red Sox, Mets, Yankees, and Phillies in a group. The Reds, Guardians, Tigers, and Blue Jays in a group.
The Pirates are not in that group, huh? Okay.
No, that would put the Orioles in with the expansion team of either, I forgot, Charlotte. Charlotte and Nashville are both making a push.
Mm-hmm.
So you could butt the Orioles and the whatever this expansion team is and the Pirates and Nationals together.
So the Pirates would be in the division with the Orioles. Okay.
Right. Pirates, National, Orioles, and then another team that's
Nashville. You got
Charlotte, Charlotte, sure. Nashville. Then down south, you've got Atlanta, Miami, Tampa Bay. Nashville could roll into there also if you did Charlotte and Nashville. That's where I think this expansion is very interesting, because they're looking at these market sizes, but also how to structure the division. Because they want this regions, because baseball is becoming a regional sport. There's very few names that people know across the country for baseball. There's Otani, there's Trout, there's Judge. But when you close it into regions, it fits into that market and fits into these local TV deals where you can really push these names in your region and then expand out.
If what you're talking about would be returning to a more heavily weighted divisional schedule once they go to 8-4s. And I think it's got to be 8-4s and not 4-8s, yes. Unless you're going to be talking about having four wild card teams, which I guess they could do.
You're right. I would probably be 8-4s.
Okay, so if they had 8-4s, then you can have two wild cards also.
Right, right. And and expanded, the fact that they expanded playoffs is also part of that mm-hmm. whole thing. And it's watching what the NHL and NBA are doing. They're both divided by region as well right now.
Yes, mostly. Okay, I don't want to argue that fact. Let's keep going on this. I guess I'm not really satisfied, to be honest, with the explanation of how the divided market doesn't lead to only one team at some point. So even if, the Orioles effectively light a 15-year fuse with a new lease that they sign with a lot of money involved, it means that's they're effectively hitting free agency again in 15 years. Now I'll be 75. I'm not sure I'll care as much, but I will.
No, and I think it's we're used to, I think thinking of DC and Baltimore as one market is what we were used to for so long, and we have to accept it that it's not a large market, it's two small markets. And there's a lot of small markets in baseball. And yes, it's hard for a small market team to keep up with the New York Yankees, but we've seen it done by the Tampa Bay Rays all the time.
I believe
the Baltimore market's the same size as Kansas City, and Kansas City has been
generally speaking, the most unsuccessful franchise over the last three or four decades, going back the time since their 85 World Series win.
But there's no talk of Kansas City leaving.
I have not heard of that. It's true. They don't have another competing. But the Midwest is a little bit different too, Josh. It's like in the East, like I grew up, I hate to drive. I don't want to drive even an hour to go anywhere. That's too far. 2 hours is ridiculous. I'm not driving for 2 hours for anything. I'll fly to a football game, but for a baseball game, baseball's got to be close. It's got to be 30 minutes away. And this is one of the things in the Midwest, people are used to, you know, jumping in the car and driving 7 hours on a weekend each way. And like, you know, this is crazy talk, but it's, you know, people are happy to do that. And you look at who's at a Chiefs game. I mean, it's the geographic spread of the people is enormous. You look at who's at a Royals game, you get less, but still a good amount of geographic spread on that area. I think their market, it may not have the population, you know, locally, not nearly what Baltimore has, but it's got more in the area that they actually draw from.
All right. Then I would say, look at a team like San Diego. We have a larger market than San Diego. If you want to compare it to another baseball team that's doing well, that's drawing well, San Diego is a smaller market size.
Yeah, they've definitely gone the big money.
No, they've spent money, but winning and big names has brought it. And I think that's what we're about to see in Baltimore is the growth of winning. We talk about, everyone made fun of Michael Elias for at the end of the season saying like liftoffs here or something. And it's not just about this team. As this team gets better, the crowds show up. We saw it this weekend. The crowds will continue to get better. And if in the next 3 years, the Orioles win the World Series, that gets you a crowds for a few years.
Yeah.
That locks you in. Now the Nationals have gone from World Series to 3 years later, putting a horrible team on the field and attendance really dropped. It's about that stability and keeping up with it, with keeping your team going. And that's a lot of why you see Mike Elias talk about how it's not about 1 year. It's about longevity.
Okay. I mean, that's good. And the Orioles without Elias, I don't know how they'd have pulled through this. The Elias operation obviously came in here and has performed a miraculous turnaround on this organization, which is wonderful. They didn't even have that in the early 90s when they moved to Camden Yards. The 89 team was a unbelievable, and you know, so far gone, you know, this is like yesterday to me, but a lot of people didn't, you know, that are listening to the show probably never saw the 89 Orioles play, never even saw an 89 highlight film. But it was a fairly young team that wasn't all terrifically talented by any stretch. I mean, the big superstar pitchers were Jeff Ballard and Bob Mulacky, who never had another good year, either of them. And the guys they had, you know, producing offensively for them were a bunch of guys who, other than Cal Ripken, who didn't really have a particularly good year, or a bunch of guys who never really did much again either. Milligan was a pretty good hitter for a while. Devereaux was a little bit of something for a while. Brady Anderson obviously still was around for the 96 and 97 teams. But the 89 Orioles, I mean, they really were like a 69 Mets type of miracle in terms of what they accomplished. The 92 to 97 Orioles, they grew out of not really very much of anything at that point. It wasn't they didn't spend to get there. They moved to a new stadium. They got a lot of surplus attendance from that move, I would postulate. Yes.
And from Cal's streak helped a lot there too.
It did helped through 95. You're right in that sense. And then they there was a, you know, being a guy who really understood the mechanics of what was going on at the time. I'll just say there was a demand for tickets that drove additional demand for tickets. There was a scarcity value to what the Orioles had with tickets at that point. It was a once in a lifetime situation for a city to have a deal like that. And it lasted in Baltimore for 6-7 years,
right?
92 through 97, roughly. They maintained the great levels of attendance. I don't know if they'll ever have that again, but I think
no, you will never have that again. Cause you had magic there. You had a brand new ballpark. Mm-hmm. You were a large market team, and technology wasn't where it was today, where I can watch the game clear on my phone, sitting outside at my home, clearer than I could have watched it on TV back then. If you go back and watch any of those, it's hard to watch baseball and follow the ball in the old pre-HD stuff.
Yeah.
So there's something there where the experience at home for football, it's about the diehards. More people watch football at home. I enjoy football better at home because I can see everything better than when I'm at the stadium. For me, I'm a baseball guy. So I prefer going to the stadium because you're part of the moment, part of the system. But I also understand that there's 81 games at home, and I can watch most of them perfectly fine on my phone or on the TV. So there's a technology aspect that we're going to see things adjust. I mentioned earlier, you're going to start seeing smaller stadiums in sports because of that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to be part of attendance isn't going to be the only factor on how you judge baseball teams in the future.
Well, fair enough. I mean, one of the problems with other measures than attendance is that you don't really have non-opaque metrics to look at. So if they're making a lot of money through a regional broadcast network, I can't see it. I can't audit it. I can't see what they're hiding. I can't see how they've got their ownership structured that might be dividing the profits differently.
Right. And baseball's also working on restructuring that. Baseball wants to bring in and pull back in some of their rights, kind of like the NFL does, so that they can do like an NFL ticket type thing.
Like a peacock in the Sunday early crap.
Right. Well, they're doing that, but eventually right now it's tricky. Like Masson can't stream their stuff on their own because they signed deals with Comcast and Verizon. So Major League Baseball hates is the blackouts because they understand that's an old thing that they got to get away from. And football is doing a little bit of that too, where they realize that, hey, we need to move away from this. And move away. So there's the future there that we can't project and expect, but we know that as more opportunity grows, these big corporations do a great job at getting their hands in there and making sure they're making money out of those regions as well.
So last question, and then we'll let this go, is why is the NFL so far ahead of baseball in terms of the brilliance of revenue sharing and a salary cap? And is there still a hope that this could come to baseball to save the sport? Not to set you up with a one-sided question here.
TV rights is definitely part of is money sharing. That's coming to baseball. They're doing it already with the luxury tax, and that's how they're getting around it.
But it's a soft cap.
Right. But also it's taking some of the money from the larger markets so that when the Yankees do well in baseball, it feeds to all of them. The games that are on ESPN, Peacock, Apple, and Fox, and I don't think ESPN has baseball anymore, but all those deals go to everyone. So that's part of their revenue sharing and a thing like that. And I think you're going to see that start to expand where it's not the Nationals stealing the money from the Orioles because they're going to start just splitting money as they pull in, split TV money with everyone is part of that. As far as a cap, I don't think you will ever see a cap in baseball because baseball has the strongest player union out of any sport. And it's the players that will never want the cap.
Well, players won't want the cap, but there's plenty of owners who don't want the cap either. What are the rules for implementing a new change among the owners in baseball? Is it a 3/4 majority like it is in football?
Well, everything has to be agreed. The union has to sign off.
Get to that second. I'm talking about the ratification just among the owners. So we'll talk about how they get it past the players second. What do they have to do to agree internally? Do they need 24 out of 23 out of 30 or whatever it would be, What do they need? Do they need a?
I don't know what the number is.
Okay.
Right, so that, it's not coming up easily on Google.
That's a real interesting number, because that's the one that says, how far down can we vote away the large team's money? And that's what capitalism is. You know, the old statement, it's two wolves and a sheep deciding what's for dinner. What democracy
right.
is.
Right, right. No, and that's where Major League Baseball has, you know, a lot of times they get away around that with rules committees and stuff to deal with that. So I do not see a great number on ownership actual voting.
Okay, so it's that at least is open in the NFL, and you know what's going on in terms of failures of things to pass, and then you're right, they'd have to get it by the players too in terms of getting it, but it would come with a revenue sharing amount, so that the other side of that is the players, yeah, they're upset with the fact that they lose potentially some higher end salaries, but in general there might be more money in total payrolls because revenue sharing might demand it.
Yes.
And so I think that the players honestly would be fairly agnostic to it if it could be demonstrated to them that the total payroll in Major League Baseball were as high or higher from it.
Well, remember, we just had a player lockout type situation last season, and it was definitely we're not even going to talk about a cap. And the players pushed, and what the players did get was a lot more money for minor league ball players, and a lower minimum salary. So there's definitely a balance there. But I know the union is very strong and very anti-cap.
All right. Well, fair enough. And that may be the sticking point, is that it can never be overcome. I will say that in football, the older players basically take money from the younger players. Is that right. The players coming into the league don't make nearly what they otherwise should make, or they basically make the younger players a terrific value proposition relative to the older players, which is a good way to basically price a lot of older players out of the game. And that's basically what's happened to a lot of veterans. And they're talking about guaranteed contracts and thinking that's going to have the consequence they intend. They'll be about as likely to get what they want out of this as Putin was getting from the Ukraine invasion what he wanted out of it. There's so many unintended consequences from having more money go to older players, with the first being that teams want fewer older players. They say, fine, right. we're agnostic to how we spend this money. But I tell you what, if you're saying we've got to pay Mr. 5-year veteran A, or we can pay a guy on his rookie contract B, and B is 20% of A, then they're going to choose a lot of Bs, and you know, they're going to be okay with it in terms of spending the same dollars in the end. But the net effect of it is there's going to be only a few players making the big multi-year contracts and that are guaranteed, and more veterans who are just out of football earlier because of it. And I honestly don't understand the NFL Players Association's view on this, and baseball and their union would be well advised to keep a fairly linear cap relationship between the veterans and the younger players.
Yeah, and you saw this you've seen this with other sports where Dominique Foxworth was very key in the NFL negotiations. Mm-hmm. And what happened is the NBA then called him and said, hey, come help us with our negotiations. So there are, I'm sure they're watching the NFL and seeing how this is. But I know in as early as February, Tony Clark, who is the president of the Players Association, said, we're not going to agree to a cap. Let me start there. We don't have a cap. We're not going to agree to a cap. A salary cap is the ultimate restriction on a player's value and a player's salary. We believe in the market system.
And they should start there. In terms of what they do. And in the end, if they were assured that the total dollars of salary were available would be equal or greater via a revenue sharing agreement, I think they have a harder time saying no to that sort of a deal. Of course, the owners right. may have a harder time saying yes to it because it may not be possible.
No, it's something with the collective bargaining. Mm-hmm. And they've been focused on using that for the minor league players. So they would be they'd have to balance that out somehow. Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. Josh, outstanding to talk about this with you. I know this is obviously a very engaging back and forth in terms of a lot of topics, and probably one we could talk for about 4 hours on.
Yeah, definitely. I've argued this so many times because I want people to show me why the Orioles are going to move. And I haven't found any legit reason to believe they're going to move.
I can point to 1961 and 1971. That's the reason why a team is going to move out of this out of one of these two markets.
Yeah, but we have two football teams in the same market
for now.
But hey, the Commanders just made Dan Snyder a ton of money in the same market, so they're not worried about that yet. I did find the ruling. It takes 75% of ownership to agree. So that's about 22 out of the 30 teams.
Be 23, because I'm sure you won't pass at 22. So you got to find, you can only have 7 teams that think they would lose by giving up their ability to outspend the others. That sounds like a very high mountain to climb in terms of getting revenue sharing.
No, I could probably count 7 right now that would say no. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. Because there's always a big disparity in the top 10 payrolls in baseball compared to the others.
Right. Josh, complete pleasure to talk about this with you. I hope people enjoyed this episode. Yeah. And if anyone else out there has ideas about this and the Baltimore-Washington rivalry in general for the what I call the single market and would like to discuss it, DM me on Twitter. I'm open to more discussion of this sort. Josh, tell folks where they can find your stuff online.
Yeah, they can find my podcast at section336.com for section 336. And then I have a whole line of Baltimore Orioles related shirts over at birdlandsports.com. That's been a lot of fun to make each week. I've got new designs going up there and it's starting to really take off. So check that out as well.
All right. Other folks out there, if you want to be on a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. Always appreciate hearing from you. I'll get right back to you. Josh, thanks again for coming on. And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.